Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
One thing is clear. Under international humanitarian law, health facilities, health workers, ambulances, and patients must be safeguarded and protected against all acts of war.
The World Health Organization condemns Israel's ongoing military raid of Al-Shifa, the largest hospital in Gaza, as the United Nations Security Council passes its first resolution calling for extended humanitarian pauses in Gaza. We'll look at the growing movement to hold Israel and its backers, including the United States, legally accountable for war crimes.
This is the mighty Israel, its might and power, targeting civilians. They are doing war crimes, crimes against humanity, persecution for 2.4 million people.
We'll speak to four international human rights attorneys in Germany, in France, in the United States, and also Raji Sarani in Gaza, if we can reach him. Then we'll be joined by the niece of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. She's calling for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Dozens of Palestinians have been killed in a 41st consecutive day of unrelenting attacks by Israel's military on the Gaza Strip. Overnight, Israel's Air Force dropped leaflets over parts of the southern city of Khan Yunis, ordering people to leave their homes and shelters, quote, for their own safety. Many are being expelled for a second time, after Israel last month ordered more than a million Palestinians to leave their homes in northern Gaza. On Wednesday, Israeli authorities allowed the first shipment of fuel into the Gaza Strip since early October. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, says just over 6,000 gallons of fuel, half a tanker truck's worth, was allowed to cross from Egypt. That's just 9% of what UNRWA says is needed daily to sustain life-saving activities. Israel's not allowing the fuel to be used in hospitals or to power water and sewage pumps. The UN's human rights chief, Volker Turk, said outbreaks of disease and hunger in Gaza now appear inevitable. His remarks came amidst a worsening humanitarian catastrophe at Gaza's largest hospital, Al-Shifa Medical Complex, which is being occupied by Israel's army. Thousands of patients, medical workers, and displaced Palestinians remain trapped inside the hospital, unable to leave. Medical workers report Israeli attacks have severely damaged Al-Shifa's main surgery building. About 200 people were reportedly blindfolded by Israeli troops and led away to interrogations. The World Health Organization's Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says 26 out of Gaza's 36 hospitals are now closed due to damage from Israeli strikes or because they've run out of fuel.
Israel's military incursion into Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City is totally unacceptable. Hospitals are not battlegrounds.
Israel's military has displayed images of weapons they claim were found inside the hospital, but Hamas has dismissed the photos as propaganda. On Wednesday, the Israel Defense Forces published videos showing what they claimed were Hamas grab bags of rifles and grenades stashed inside the hospital. Doctors at Al-Shifa have repeatedly denied such claims. President Biden's repeated Israeli claims about Hamas using hospitals as military bases. Biden spoke to reporters from California Wednesday evening after wrapping APEC, the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Summit, in San Francisco.
You have a circumstance where the first war crime is being committed by Hamas by having their headquarters, their military, hidden under a hospital. And that's a fact. That's what's happened.
President Biden provided no evidence for the claim. His remarks came after a meeting with Chinese President Xi Jinping at the APEC summit. The pair emerged with several agreements, including one to reestablish military communications and one curbing the Chinese export of chemicals used for the production of fentanyl. On Wednesday evening, Xi Jinping mingled with leaders of corporate America, including Elon Musk and Apple CEO Tim Cook, at a lavish reception. Hours after their meeting, Biden ratcheted up tensions with China when he called President Xi a dictator.
I mean, he's a dictator in the sense that he is a guy who runs a country that is a communist country based on a form of government totally different than ours. Anyway.
Earlier today, Beijing responded to Biden's remarks, calling them, quote, irresponsible political manipulation. The United Nations Security Council has passed a resolution calling for urgent and extended humanitarian pauses and corridors throughout the Gaza Strip. The measure was approved by a 12-0 vote after the United States, United Kingdom, and Russia abstained. Four prior attempts by the Council to pass resolutions calling for ceasefires or so-called humanitarian pauses were vetoed by the United States. Daily protests against Israel's attack on Gaza continue. In Washington, D.C., human rights activists gathered in front of the White House for a vigil calling on President Biden to back an immediate ceasefire. Body bags were laid out on the ground to represent the more than 11,500 Palestinians killed by the U.S.-backed Israeli assault. Later in the evening, activists blocked the entrance of the Democratic National Committee headquarters before police violently removed them. Lawmakers, including House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, were gathered for a campaign event inside. This is Eva Bugwart of the Jewish Peace Group, If Not Now.
Outside the Democratic Party headquarters, because this party claims to be on the side of life and peace and equality, and we're saying that we want them to live up to their values and oppose this horrific war and call for a ceasefire now. And we're being responded to by the police shoving anti-war activists down the stairs, shoving peaceful protesters back with their bikes. And because our party that 80% of us want a ceasefire, would rather beat up protesters.
Hold on. Should we continue?
The interview was interrupted when police resumed beating protesters, spraying them with chemical agents, and arresting them. In Los Angeles, over 1,000 American Jews and others held an emergency sit-in on one of Hollywood's busiest streets to demand an immediate ceasefire. Earlier this week, over 700 Jewish activists and their allies shut down Oakland's federal building. Hundreds of people were arrested in the action. At the prestigious National Book Awards ceremony last night, 20 of the 25 nominated authors made a collective statement on stage calling for a ceasefire. This is the author, Alia Bilal.
On behalf of the finalists, we oppose the ongoing bombardment of Gaza and call for a humanitarian ceasefire to address the urgent humanitarian needs of Palestinian civilians, particularly children. We oppose anti-Semitism and anti-Palestinian sentiment and Islamophobia equally, accepting the human dignity of all parties, knowing that further bloodshed does nothing to secure lasting peace.
One of the New York City event sponsors, Zibi Media, withdrew its support ahead of the prize ceremony after learning of the author's plan to speak out against the war. Meanwhile, Black Christian faith leaders have been meeting with White House officials and members of the Congressional Black Caucus to call for an end to the violence. Last week, over 900 Black faith leaders representing churches across the U.S. took out a full-page ad in the New York Times to call for a ceasefire and a commitment to a meaningful peace process. 24 members of the House of Representatives have signed a joint letter calling on President Biden to press for a bilateral ceasefire in Gaza on the basis of grave violations of children's rights. The letter was authored by Democratic Congress members Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York, Mark Pocan of Wisconsin, and Betty McCollum of Minnesota. This comes as the powerful lobby group AIPAC, that's the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, steps up its support for primary challengers to lawmakers who voice support for a ceasefire. Slate magazine reports AIPAC is expected to spend $100 million in Democratic primaries backing opponents of House progressives. The Senate's approved a short-term funding bill to keep the government open until early 2024, sending the measure to President Biden for a signature ahead of a midnight deadline Friday to avert a government shutdown. Its passage on Wednesday came as far-right members of the House of Representatives rebelled against Republican Speaker Mike Johnson to punish party leaders for crafting a compromise bill with Democrats. The rebellion prompted Speaker Johnson to abruptly adjourn the House until after the Thanksgiving holiday. In Texas, seven more women who were denied medically necessary abortions joined a lawsuit filed by the Center for Reproductive Rights against the state of Texas. There are now 22 plaintiffs as the case heads to the Texas Supreme Court later this month. The case seeks to clarify what constitutes a medical emergency, allowing for an abortion, and to permit doctors to make that call without fear of prosecution. One of the new plaintiffs is Danielle Matheson, who's an OBGYN who was forced to leave her home state just to get abortion care. Dr. Matheson said, quote, Texas lawmakers know nothing about medicine, and they have created a full-blown public health crisis, unquote. In related news, a federal judge last week blocked an Idaho law which made it a crime to help a minor cross state lines for an abortion without parental consent. The judge says the law, signed in April by Republican Governor Brad Little, violated the First Amendment. This comes as the Justice Department backed two lawsuits challenging a similar law in Alabama. And in Ghana, African leaders have issued a collective call for reparations for the historic enslavement of people of African descent. Togo's Prime Minister, Victoire Tomega Dogbe, was one of the speakers during the two-day conference in Accra.
The psychological trauma inflicted by this abhorrent practice continues to resonate across generations, affecting our collective consciousness. Colonialism, with its arbitrary borders and economic exploitation, further reinforced racial hierarchies and sowed seeds of discord that persist to this day. The scars of exploitation, dispossession, and cultural erasure persist, manifesting themselves in contemporary challenges such as economic inequality, political instability, and cultural disintegration.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Nermeen Sheikh. Hi, Nermeen.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Israel's rejecting a United Nations Security Council call for urgent and extended humanitarian pauses in Gaza as Israel's bombardment of the besieged enclave continues for a 41st day. The UN Security Council passed the resolution by a vote of 12-0, with the United States, Britain, and Russia abstaining. It's the first resolution passed by the UN Security Council since Israel began its bombardment after the Hamas attack on Israel on October 7th. This comes as Israel's continuing its military raid on Al-Shifa, the largest hospital in Gaza. Israel's long claim Hamas placed a major command center underneath the hospital, but Israel has not shared any evidence of this so far. Israel's displayed images of weapons they claim were found inside the hospital, but Hamas has dismissed the photos as propaganda. On Wednesday, the Secretary General of the World Health Organization, Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, condemned the raid on Al-Shifa.
Israel's military incursion into Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City is totally unacceptable. Hospitals are not battlegrounds. We are extremely worried for the safety of staff and patients. Protecting them is paramount. WHO has lost contact with health workers at Al-Shifa Hospital. But one thing is clear. Under international humanitarian law, health facilities, health workers, ambulances, and patients must be safeguarded and protected against all acts of war. Not only that, they must be actively protected during military planning.
As Israel rejects growing international calls for a ceasefire in Gaza, there are mounting efforts to hold Israel and its backers accountable for committing war crimes in Gaza. Here in the United States, the Center for Constitutional Rights has sued President Biden, accusing him of failing to prevent genocide. Today, CCR is seeking an emergency order to block Biden, as well as Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, from providing further military funding, arms, and diplomatic support to Israel. We're joined now by Catherine Gallagher, senior attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights, one of the lawyers who brought the case. Catherine, can you lay out the case for us? What are you demanding of the U.S. government, of President Biden?
Morning, Amy. This case filed on Monday was filed on behalf of two Palestinian human rights organizations, Defense for Children International Palestine, Al-Haq, which is the oldest Palestinian human rights organization, which for the first time in its history is unable to do its work in Gaza because of the conditions, as well as three Palestinians in Gaza and five Palestinian American families who have members of their families killed, injured, and under direct threat right now in Gaza. We filed this case against President Biden, Secretary of State Blinken, and Secretary of State Austin with two claims. One is that they have absolutely and completely failed in their duty under international law and U.S. law to take all measures possible to prevent the unfolding genocide against the Palestinian population in Gaza. The United States is a signatory to the Genocide Convention, and in recognition of the severity that this is the crime of crimes when it requires the specific intent to destroy a group, a national or ethnic group, in whole or in part, that is such a serious crime that states are obligated to take all measures within their control, all measures possible, from the second, from the minute they learn of the possibility of genocide, to stop that. We have not seen the United States do that, despite its considerable influence over Israel in the form of hundreds of billions of dollars in military aid that it sent over the decades and billions in the past year. Instead of using that influence to stop the killing, to stop the imposition of a total siege, denying all basic necessities to 2.2 million people in the enclosed space of Gaza. They have rushed weapons. They have given unconditional political support up until yesterday when we saw a Security Council resolution not yet call for a complete ceasefire. The United States had blocked all measures at the international level. So we are bringing the first claim for its failure to prevent the unfolding genocide. And the second claim is that it's actually complicit in genocide. We lay out the case that Israel is actually committing genocide at this moment. And we are able to do so, unfortunately, it's with no pleasure that we say this, at this early moment because of the very clear statements of intent by Prime Minister Netanyahu, by his Minister of Defense, and other senior Israeli officials about their intentions against the entire population in Gaza. They have been clear that they see this, the people, the children of Gaza, as less than human, describing the population as monsters or human animals, and then taking away all of the basic necessities, food, fuel, water, electricity. We've certainly, as you just played, heard what has happened to the healthcare and medical facilities, bombed and invaded. And so in the face of all of this, the United States, when it has continued to send weapons, to send military advisors, to rush aid and give moral and political support to Israel's actions, we say it is aiding and abetting genocide.
And so, Catherine, could you, because it seems that there's some disagreement or dispute about whether what's taking place right now is a genocide or ethnic cleansing, even among scholars of genocide. So could you explain the distinction between the two and how it is that the people whom you've had advising you on this case are convinced that what's happening right now, not what is to come, what is unfolding right now is a genocide.
So just to first clarify, ethnic cleansing is actually not a crime. Ethnic cleansing is a description that is often used, whether for crimes against humanity, such as extermination or forcible transfer and deportation. And I want to be very clear, those in and of themselves are serious crimes. The International Criminal Court has jurisdiction over those crimes. And frankly, it should be bringing arrest warrants for those crimes at this moment. So that is the first point. As to why we believe it is a genocide, the elements of genocide are that specific intent to destroy in whole or in part a group, and then there are underlying acts for genocide. And we think three of the five underlying acts are present in this case: killing, causing serious bodily or mental harm, and creating the conditions of life intended to destroy a population in whole or in part. And so to unpack that a bit, what we have at the front end, and usually specific intent is something that needs to be determined and only able to be concluded after the fact. I worked at the Yugoslav War Crimes Tribunal on the Srebrenica cases, and I know how difficult even in that case it was to make the conclusion that it was genocide. Here, we have those statements up front, and what we have from the Israeli officials is backing up those statements to impose a total siege and deny an entire population the basic necessities of life, the access to, as I said, food, fuel, electricity, which are necessary for hospitals to run, for people to be able to make their food, for water. We are seeing the start of starvation happening. And of course, all of that has happened under intense and continual military bombardment of a space that has a blockade and closed borders. And that blockade has been in place for 16 years. And again, I would say that there have been crimes against humanity being committed against the Palestinian population in Gaza, at least throughout the entirety of that 16-year blockade. What we have seen now is the expression of specific intent to destroy that population. And that, with the killings that we have seen already, well over 11,000 people have lost their lives, including over 4,600 children. We see that this is a campaign against the entire population. So for genocide, when you take that specific intent, as expressed by the senior Israeli officials who have the capacity to carry out those threats, and then the actions, and we are seeing that they are carrying out exactly what they promised, then you are able to make the case for genocide. And I just want to emphasize again that because of the seriousness of this crime of crimes, the duty to prevent kicks in as soon as a country is on notice of a serious risk of genocide. And the United States has been on notice since at least October 9th, when the Minister of Defense announced the total siege, which was then imposed, if not already on October 7th, when Prime Minister Netanyahu made threats to turn the entire Gaza Strip into rubble and to erase it off the earth. And so that is why we feel that that duty to prevent, if not already liability for complicity, is present. And what we need, we don't need to be quibbling about legal definitions at this moment. What we need is action. We need the President of the United States, the Secretary of State, and the Secretary of Defense to do what the vast majority of the world has been calling for weeks, and that is stop this killing. Stop the siege on Gaza. Allow the 2.2 million people to live with dignity, to have their rights respected, and to not be subjected to this horror that we have all been witnessing and trying to do whatever we can to make the most powerful country on earth have some compassion and comply with the law.
Catherine Gallagher, we thank you for being with us, senior staff attorney at the Center for Constitutional Rights, which is seeking an emergency order today to block President Biden, as well as Secretary of State Antony Blinken, Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, from providing further military funding, arms, and diplomatic support to Israel. Coming up, we go to France and Italy to speak with human rights attorneys, Germany and France, to hold Israel and its backers, including the U.S., legally accountable, and will try to reach a human rights attorney in Gaza. Stay with us.
جزر القمر يلعب بخيوطي وارقص على لحن مش مسموع مشاعر شعري ما بتحس غبار تلمع نور الشمس بالغرفة
Nahas and Dina Awadidi. Rasha Nahas is a Palestinian singer who held a concert Tuesday in Berlin, donating all proceeds to Medecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh. As Israel rejects the United Nations Security Council resolution calling for urgent and extended humanitarian pauses in Gaza, we're continuing to look at growing efforts to hold Israel legally accountable for war crimes in Gaza. Joining us from Berlin, Germany, is Chantal Maloney. She is an international criminal lawyer, international criminal law professor at the University of Milan in Italy. She's also senior legal advisor for international crimes accountability with the European Center for Constitutional and Human Rights in Berlin. She also consults with the Palestinian Center for Human Rights and represents victims in Palestine before the International Criminal Court. She's the author of the book, Is There a Court for Gaza? Her new piece for Justice and Conflict is headlined, The War in Gaza, International Law is Nothing If It Is Not Applied. And with us in France is Reid Brody, longtime human rights attorney, war crimes prosecutor. Brody has been involved in several major war crimes cases, including against Chile's former dictator, Augusto Pinochet, Haiti's Jean-Claude Baby Doc Duvalier, and the former Chadian dictator, Hissène Habré. He's author of To Catch a Dictator, The Pursuit and Trial of Hissène Habré, and he's the son of a Hungarian Holocaust survivor. Reid's recent piece for The Nation is headlined, Gaza, Where is the Law? Chantal Maloney, let's begin with you. Where is the law? We are trying to reach a man you and Reid have worked closely with in Gaza, Raji Sarani, who lived in northern Gaza. His home was bombed, now forced to live in Khan Yunis. And now parts of Khan Yunis have been covered with leaflets saying that those who are there must move further south.
Yes, indeed. Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me with you today. I think that what we have witnessed in the past weeks, it's literally the commission on each and every international crime that you may find listed under the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. And I was listening very careful to what my colleague Katie Gallagher just said before, their very, very important legal action in the U.S. And, of course, she started to talk about the fact that Gaza is under blockade since 16 years. So I think we need to go back to 2007, and we need to go back to the first efforts that have been done already in 2009 to basically bring these violations and possible grave crimes to the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court. So let's just remember that it was already in January 2009 that the Palestinian Authority so to say, knocked on the door of the International Criminal Court, lodging an Article 15.3, so an ad hoc acceptance of the jurisdiction of the ICC, in order to have these grave crimes that had already been committed during the Operation Cast Lead investigated and possibly prosecuted in The Hague. And I want to remember really the conclusions that already the UN fact-finding mission on the Gaza Strip, the so-called Goldstone Report, after the name of Richard Goldstone, the famous South African judge, had reached in 2009, meaning that the closure of